Donald Trump criticizing the president for tying up Manhattan during the annual tree lighting ceremony at Rockefeller Center.
So he's having a fundraiser right near Rockefeller Center where thousands of people are coming to see the tree light up. This president is a much different person than people know. He's a very inconsiderate guy. Stop with the fundraisers and start running the country, because you are doing one hell of a lousy job.
All right. It's not just the Donald. Billionaire chairman and CEO of hedge fund Omega Advisors, Leon Cooperman, penned a letter to the president recently with a plea to stop the class warfare that he's saying he initiated. Here now to discuss all of this are the Freedom Fighters, AMA Productions CEO Emilia Antonetti, Fox News radio host Alan Combs, and Reason Foundation's Julian Morris. Alan, first to you. The Donald saying the president being inconsiderate. I take it that
he is missing consideration, so I'm amazed he would say something like that. What a good, well-mannered guy calling the president inconsiderate. And that's a good, you want to go to, he is Emily Post. So you want to go to Donald Trump to be considered inconsiderate. That's the guy, that's the go-to guy to find out etiquette.
All right, Emilia, let's switch gears. Let's turn to Leon Cooperman and what he's saying. Leon Cooperman said in his letter to the president, you know, stop with the polarizing rhetoric. It's not working. Appeal to the better instincts in human beings. And by the way, Leon Cooperman donated to the president's campaign. What did you make of what Leon Cooperman was saying?
I applauded him. It's about time that more CEOs stand up and actually say what's really happening. And I've been talking about this for the last 2 years, that at ground level, small businesses and now medium-sized businesses, and obviously he's got big business, are frustrated with the rules and regulations and basically the sludge that they've created in the business community. And now the class warfare basically has put this myth between us and them in the community, where the small business is the glue of the community. Now you see inner fighting down at street level with misconceptions which are not even remotely accurate. So you're going to see more CEOs come out with their frustration, because this entire administration has done just absolute, complete devastation for the
small business. All right, you know, and Julian, what Leon Cooperman's point is that he grew up poor. He grew up dirt poor. He made a name for himself, and he created a lot of jobs, provided a lot of health insurance for his workers. What do you make of what he's saying there to the president? Stop the class warfare rhetoric. It's polarizing. It doesn't work.
Well, it's clear that in the past few years, you've seen bailouts aplenty, which has driven stock prices higher. It's seemingly led to a sort of mini boom. But it's now becoming clear that this is not going to last, that the economy is going to take a slide. And all of the regulations, as the media pointed out, are really hitting business badly. And people who've come from the bottom can see that. They can see that this is a problem. And so no matter where their political allegiances lie, they are against what's happening. They want change. They want a cut to regulations. They want a cut in tax.
All right, Alan, make the case that the president's rhetoric is not class warfare.
Well, by the way, I'm not here to represent the White House. However, the class warfare is coming the other side. The people who don't want to reduce the Bush or get rid of the Bush tax cuts for the rich, the people who want to preserve the rich, the people, they're the 1%. This guy, Cooperman, he's the 1%. Now, he's contributed to both Democrats and Republicans, by the way, politically. But he's the 1%, and Obama represents the 99%. So, you know, why are we surprised that a CEO and a billionaire is critical of regulations? Lack of regulations is what got us into the mess we got into a few years ago.
All right, we can regulate, though, all you want, Julian. It's really an issue of enforcement. There's a shortage of enforcement. But getting back to what Alan is saying, that really the Republicans are the drivers of class warfare, what do you make of that?
I mean, this is nonsense. The reality is that it's political partisanship by both parties that is contributing to this idea. A large minority of the electorate are now independents. They're not for one or the other. Why is that? Because they don't agree with the partisanship. They think that we want to have a less regulated, less taxed society. It's
right.
Not true.
Larger majority of people who are not the super wealthy.
All right, Emilia, weigh in here. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm saying, this is the class warfare. Look, the super wealthy, I mean, when you take a look at the policies, is putting your small business in there. We're not super wealthy, and nobody cares more about
our employees.
Who says we? Than we do.
What's the we? Are you the we? Are you the 1%? I'm not the
1%. Well, I'm definitely a small business owner, and I definitely know, according to what they're saying, yes, I would become the
most small business owners are not complaining about regulation.
All the small business owners that I know, and I know a few, my father-in-law is a small business owner, is stuffed by regulations. He cannot move anywhere from regulations.
Right, who wanted to do away with regulations, that's what caused lack of oversight is what caused the financial.
All right, we got Alan Combs to say, you people, God bless you. Next up, Democratic congressman and head of the House Financial Services Committee, Barney Frank, is on his way out. But before the pro-business community breathes a sigh of relief, it should be beware of Mad Max. That's Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And don't forget, she's the lawmaker who railed against bank bailouts, except for one bank, One United, a bank she and her husband had about $350,000 worth of stock in, and a bank which also got $12.1 million in TARP money after Waters allegedly acted as a liaison between the bank and the U.S. Treasury. Julian, will Congresswoman Waters succeed, Frank, as a ranking member in the House Financial Services Committee? What is your forecast here?
Well, it seems that if she was really responsible, she would have resigned on announcement of the conflict of interest that she already had.
And since
she hasn't resigned, she should be pushed out. I mean, if there's anything that is necessary in bank regulation, it's integrity. But frankly, the whole system is completely kaput.
All right, Amelia, here's the issue. One United got a cease and desist order, and then it got TARP money. Cease and desist order for, you know, unsound banking practices, abuses of executive pay. Also, Maxine Waters helped to loosen mortgage lending practices, basically loosening credit to people who shouldn't have gotten loans. And she got exempted from Dodd-Frank, Fannie and Freddie Mac. What do you make of all that?
She must have some lucky charm. I have no idea how this woman is still in play. She absolutely should be removed. I think she has absolutely zero integrity. And even the things that she is for with the different rules and regulations, when you put the domino effect, she basically puts the chokehold on business.
All right. So would you say Maxine Waters is part of the culture of corruption in the 1% that both the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street are against?
You want to choose a Democrat, of course. You want to pick a Democrat.
No, we're not choosing
a Democrat.
Next is
going to be Barney Frank, and then we're going to go after Chris Dodd. And then it's always the Democrats who've got a problem. When the culture, as you talk about it, is much more widespread than one person, you want to demonize Maxine Waters or Barney Frank because they're easy targets.
No, we're just talking about their track record.
All right, Julie, track record of Barney Frank. I'm going to miss Barney Frank.
Well,
go ahead.
I mean, there is a problem here that on both sides there are conflicts, and on both sides there has been incompetency. I think it's highly problematic when you put elected officials in charge of regulatory agencies, essentially.
Well,
I'd much rather the market regulate itself. Allow you and me.
All right, Alan, sit tight.
Alan,
I want you to respond to this.
Yeah.
Both Barney Frank and Maxine Waters said there was no problem with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they have never walked back on those statements.
And you know,
they've never stepped down from that.
Bush regulator said it. Hank Paulson said it. The Bush himself said it. Again, you want to single out Barney Frank and Maxine Waters.
Amelia, is this just argumentative relativism, and we have to set that aside, and we got to move forward and fix the problems? And much as I love Alan Cohn, very smart man, but you know, listen, Barney Frank and Maxine Waters, along with a lot of other people in Congress, sat there and didn't do anything when they
it's
saw
not
the
true,
bubbles
they didn't do
blowing.
Anything.
No, and now look at the domino effect that's going into play. I mean, we can very clearly tie it right back to that whole group of people. I don't think any of them should actually be there. And we're not learning from our mistakes, meaning that we keep saying we need more jobs, we need more innovation, we need more manufacturing, but yet we continually make the same mistakes by chokeholding.
Right, Alan, you brought up a good point in your comments prior to the show that Barney Frank was for keeping Glass-Steagall and
right.
for auditing
He was against the repeal
Fed.
Of Glass-Steagall,
right.
which he blames for a lot of the meltdown that took place. People want to blame it on Fannie and Freddie and Barney, and yet Barney Frank stood up actually for more oversight and against
and for auditing the Fed.
And for auditing the Fed, by the way, which conservatives should love, and against the repeal of Glass-Steagall. So I would think conservatives would love Barney Frank for those things.
All right, but Julian, Glass-Steagall would not have stopped the blow up at Lehman Brothers or Bear
absolutely.
Stearns. And also, it would have, basically,
These
when
are
you
investment
talk
banks.
About, right, when you talk about too big to fail, I mean, the banks bought other, Merrill Lynch, and they got even bigger. I'm not so sure Glass-Steagall would have prevented that. Go ahead.
Most likely not. I mean, and ultimately, Barney Frank, of course, was there pushing for more loans to mortgage lenders by Fannie and Freddie. That's true. But it's a nonpartisan form of insanity.
Because you guys are always, are always attacking Barney Frank. He's the boogeyman. He's Satan.
Alan, the point is that it's a nonpartisan form of insanity.
There was
undertaking.
The Treasury Secretary was pushing this.
We have the fox in charge of the chicken coop. I mean, that's the fundamental thing that's wrong here. No different for me. As a CEO, I can't take money.
Barney Frank was in the minority party at the time. He wasn't even running Congress. He was a minority member.
I think you're going to campaign. We've got the 99%, the 1%, and new people. Alan Cohn's going to go campaign against you people.
You people are the 1%.
Well, I don't know. I'm not 1% if you can see my salary. Yeah. But God bless you. God bless the gang. Always great to be with you. Welcome back. The National Labor Relations Board cannot seem to sate its hunger for more union power. And its acting general counsel, Leif Solomon, was just given unchecked authority that carries the power of law, since the president cannot get the Senate to approve his nomination to fill the required third spot on the board. And until that happens, Mr. Solomon will essentially act as another czar in this president's administration. To my freedom fighters, Alan Combs, Julian Morris, and Amelia Antonetti, they have returned. Now, Amelia, are you concerned that Mr. Solomon's powers are now expanding at the NLRB?
I'm afraid. I'm absolutely afraid because he is so pro-union. And everything that he's, again, power for one person, how is that possible that somebody else isn't saying immediately we need to put the third leg?
Wait, hang on a second. What we're talking about here, Julian, is the National Labor Relations Board is supposed to have a quorum, right? They're supposed to have three. Yeah, you know the whole layout of the land there. And so because they don't have a quorum, they've got to get the general counsel. They had the general counsel, Leif Solomon, taking interim authority to basically push through rulemaking at the NLRB. He's the one who spearheaded the suit against Boeing, who wanted to put that factory in South Carolina. Yeah. Also the suit against the four states who wanted to have secret ballots if workers want to have a union. Are you concerned about what's happening at the NLRB?
Well, I mean, that seems like an abuse of the rules. I mean, if you're supposed to have three parties and you allow one person to effectively have two seats, and they therefore become, so that's an abuse of the rules. The NLRB exists in order to benefit unions. Essentially, that's its purpose. Unions exist under statute now. People join unions and get excessive statutory powers as a result of that.
Union bashing.
All right, but Alan, hang on a second.
Well, the point here is that if you're not a union worker, you're harmed by people who are members of the union.
Okay.
Because the union workers...
I'm so tired of this union bashing.
Well, no, but this is just the fact of the matter.
Fundamentally, the three were put in place for a reason to keep it balanced.
But let's get it straight. Union workers have rights over and above non-union workers. Is that right?
All right, no. Sit tight, Alan. I want to get to Alan.
Right,
all right, sit tight, Alan. Alan, all right, South Carolina, where the Boeing plant is going to be built, has an unemployment rate north of 10%. And the Boeing plant would have created jobs with Solomon's case. Do you think Solomon's case against Boeing was justified?
Yes, exactly. And let me tell you why. Because what they were doing is they were punishing workers in Washington, the state of Washington, where Boeing was. They wanted the right to strike. In order to retaliate against them for striking, they went and built this plant in South Carolina. And that is against the law. That's what happened. And that's why
it's been against.
That is not
what happened.
That's exactly
what happened.
That is absolutely not what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
All right, let Amelia talk.
It was retaliation against striking workers.
A company will fight to keep its margins. Because if we keep our margins, we stay in business and we employ people. They could not, with the rules and regulations, keep their balance of north side of their margin, and they went somewhere else, and they didn't just randomly.
They did it to punish workers.
What happens if companies aren't allowed to make decisions about where to locate and to employ people on a free basis?
Where are the workers' rights?
What happens is the employment goes elsewhere entirely.
Exactly. And
if Boeing can't make money in America, either it will move its operations outside of America, or competition, Airbus,
Alan, take the final one.
And Embraer in Brazil.
We got to move on.
That harms American workers.
All right, next up, railroad unions dissatisfied with their contracts. They're going to go on strike. They could go on strike as early as next week. And the National Retail Federation is begging Congress to step in on a private matter. House Speaker Boehner and other Republican leaders are heeding that call, saying they are prepared to vote on a bill to halt the strike. Now, Julian, would the Tea Party who helped Congressman Boehner become Speaker Boehner agree with this big government intervention? What do you make of this?
It's an interesting conundrum. I would say probably not.
All right, so they wouldn't agree. So you're going to keep it there. But, Alan, then here's the deal. The railroads basically transport a lot of retail goods that shoppers like to shop for. That's why this is a problem.
I'm actually with you on this. Probably with the Tea Party, the government should not be involved in this dispute. I'd like to see them stay out of it if at all possible.
All right, what do you make of it, Amelia?
You know, as a business owner, here's where I'm stuck. The reality is right now, given the fourth quarter and where businesses is right now, if the unions strike, you're going to take a whole bunch of business and they're going to go belly up.
Oh, you want the government all of a sudden.
Not
love the government, but I understand economy is where it is and unemployment is where it is right now. Most small businesses put their merchandise as a loss leader.
You want Big Brother to step in.
Here's the underlying problem, though. That the government has created these statutory rights for union workers to go on strike.
Right.
If it hadn't created those rights, then the workers wouldn't be going on strike. So you can see that the government is in a bind.
The government's fault.
But the solution is not the solution.
The solution is
not to mandate. The solution is not to mandate.
It's always
the solution is not to mandate.
All right, hang on, gang. Hang on. Enough. All right, next up. All right. All right, Alan, here's a question to you. Final question, all right?
Yes.
The last time that railway workers went on strike, Congress effectively imposed an agreement within one day. Would you say that the government is infringing on their First Amendment right to free speech here?
I would say this, again, as I said, the government should probably stay out of this.
All right, Amelia, so you're saying they should step in. You say they should step out. Julian, where do you come down again?
Ultimately, I think that you've got to go back to first principles. The government's role is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property. Now, its responsibility is not to extend to intervening in individual businesses, but it also should not be intervening in creating separate rights for some individuals, so that they have the right to strike, etc. And
the workers should be free to contract.
But does it need to protect the economy? Given the state where we are right now, do we protect the economy?
Thank God for union.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Alan Colmes slipped in the last word. All right, next up, imagine a world where your startup business could opt out of paying corporate taxes and out of those pesky government regulations. Well, that's a reality. It's just a short ferry right away. That story and more with the Freedom Fighters is next. Don't go away. Welcome back. He's the co-founder of PayPal, an early investor in Facebook. And now he's ponying up the funds for a venture that could be just as successful. Libertarian venture capitalist Peter Thiel is leading the way on a seasteading ocean vessel that will let you run your business regulation-free. You won't even need a visa. So what do the Freedom Fighters think? AMA Productions CEO Amelia Antonetti, syndicated radio talk show host Alan Colmes, Vice President of Research for the Reason Foundation, Julian Morris, back with us now. Amelia, what do you make of this idea?
Yay! I love it. Everything about it. I love when an entrepreneur outsmarts the system, and I love this.
Here's what you guys should do. Go start your own country. Go and take Peter Schiff with you. Go and find a country.
How about you give us back our country and you people leave?
Wait a minute. You're taking my country away from me. Go get yourself your own country.
But this isn't a genius idea. It doesn't entail
what
changing things
from,
necessarily. I'm originally from Britain. I live in America.
He probably pays more taxes than 48% of the rest of the country.
All right, quickly, let Julian talk. Go ahead.
So very quickly, this has two really significant benefits. One is it's going to show all of those tech folks in Silicon Valley that if they could exist without regulations and taxes, they would do even better. Mm-hmm. And isn't there support for all those dumb...
All right, we got to leave it there. Now, have you heard about this one? Former Philadelphia schools chief Arlene Ackermer got almost $1 million in a buyout in August because she's stepping down. But becoming a millionaire apparently is not enough for Ackermer. Now she's applied to collect state unemployment benefits. And the separation agreement that she signed on her way out the door... Basically, she got an agreement not to let anyone challenge her unemployment benefits application. So, Alan, is this proof that entitlement programs should be wound down because people abuse them? What do you make of this?
Well, people abuse it because one person abused it. Let's take it away from everybody. Is that the goal? Look, what she's doing is wrong. I'm not going to defend it. But does that mean we end everything, throw the baby out with the bathwater? Nobody gets it because this woman is abusing it?
All right, Amelia, what did you make of this story?
Ridiculous.
She should not be allowed to collect unemployment, period.
She
should not be able to do that. And why somebody would put it in her contract is absurd.
All right, what do you make of that, Julian, she got a contract that she can't be contested?
Coming from Europe, where unemployment benefits in many countries are completely out of control, and which is, of course, part of the problem there. And I think in the U.S., things are better. Unemployment benefits are not as ridiculous. However... they could be constrained more. They should be limited to people who clearly are in dire need, rather than to people who have a million bucks
Do we need to means test people for, as Julian suggests, for unemployment?
I don't know. It's a case-by-case situation. This woman, she got $1 million buyout, and now she's going to go and apply for unemployment. I think you look at it on a case-by-case basis.
All right, should we means test?
Yeah, I mean, we do for food stamps and a lot of other things, right? If you make underneath a certain thing, you qualify. For her, obviously, her bank account, she doesn't qualify for unemployment.
And I think you can't have it on a case-by-case basis. There has to be a rule, because if it's a case-by-case basis...
What's the rule now? Isn't the rule that she's entitled to it based on the law?
No, it's based on her contract.
So if she's doing it by the rules, she's playing by the rules.
Well, she's playing by a contract.
So those are the rules.
But the rules should change.
But Julian, here's another problem too.
I mean, the real abuse that is not is underreported in this country is what school superintendents get paid and the cushy benefits they get, including government-provided jobs, even their own parking spaces. Even the Democrats have said that there needs to be reform on the local and state level because our property taxes are funding it.
What do you make of that?
Well, absolutely. As a property taxpayer in New Jersey, where property taxes are pretty much through the roof. I experience this on a regular basis. So what to do with it? I think there has to be more competition in the provision of education. There has to be less reliance on the state to supply that education.
The great thing about this is the state should be judged on performance. And the state guarantees every child in the United States an education, and that should never change.
All right, we're not talking about, you know...
But that's where the money goes.
Wait, hang on. Amelia, sit with me for a second on this. Because we're not talking about gouging or taking away teacher pay here. We're talking about superintendents.
Yes.
We're talking about the bureaucrats who run the system. Those are the people who get the perky perks and the cushy pay. What do you
and
make of that
crazy
final
contracts.
Word?
Crazy contracts that are outrageous. And they're getting paid twice as much as in the private sector. It's completely out of balance, and they don't even work a full year.
All right, we got to let it go here. We're going to give you guys a final word there, Amelia. You always do a terrific job. Thank you to the Freedom Fighters, Amelia Antonetti, Alan Combs, and Julian Morris. I'm Liz McDonald, filling in for Judge Napolitano. I'll be back tomorrow night, and the judge returns on Friday. Good night, America.